Hey, so we just want to flag that today's episode briefly, very briefly, touches on the topic of self-harming. So if you or a loved one are self-harming or struggling with your mental health, we encourage you to seek treatment. One of the ways you can do this is you can get support from the crisis text line by texting HOME, H-O-M-E, to 741-741. You can also call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. All right, so on to today's show.
The lines just got so blurry so quickly. And, you know, that informed my life later, you know, and put me in a lot of really dangerous situations because I had never been taught how to say no. In fact, I was shamed if I said no. I prided myself on, you know, you grit your teeth and do it. You know, you go as far as you possibly can, even if you're uncomfortable, even if you're cold, even if you're humiliated.
Yeah. Like, and that's even
part
not-
of being an actor, there's this pride of like, I can take it.
Yeah, I can do it. I can take it.
Yeah, I can fucking take it.
This is Podcrushed,
the podcast that takes the sting out of rejection, one crushing middle school story at a time.
And where guests share their teenage memories, both meaningful and mortifying.
And we're your hosts. I'm Nava, a former middle school director.
I'm Sophie, a former fifth grade teacher.
And I'm Penn, a middle school dropout. We're just three Baha'is who are living in Brooklyn.
Wanting to make stuff together.
With a particular fondness for awkward nostalgia.
Well, I struggle with nostalgia. I'm here for the therapy.
We have a great episode today, but before we get into it, really quick, can we get like a 20, 30 second recap from everyone's weeks? Because I feel like
Too short. 20 to 30 seconds.
Penn has never done
anything. Penn, you've lost 10 seconds. 20 seconds left.
No, you go. Sophie, go.
This week was crazy because we were all on different continents. I was in Sydney with David. Penn, you're shooting in London. Nava's here in LA. Mm-hmm. I'm like currently trying to figure out, can I still do the podcast and move to Sydney? Like,
I think let's just pause it and definitely get our lives in order. And
I just got a puppy this week. No, actually, I got him a month ago, but this week is when I really started to love him because he had quite a turning point. He's the cutest. His name is Louie, and he's all over my Instagram if you guys want to check him out. Penn, how's your week been?
Listen, guys, at least twice a week, I, at the end of the day, have to spend extra time cleaning fake dirt and blood off of most of my upper body. Because I'm hard at work in season four of my show.
Why did you say fake in quotation marks?
It's actually real.
Did I do air quotes? Well, I guess that was redundant. So I'm killing people now.
Yeah.
And it's hard to bury them all.
Wait, I never thought about that you have to clean yourself off. Is that true?
Well, who's going to do it?
I know. What, I mean, I guess you I think just I'm, assumed
am I,
that.
Am I a sultan?
Speaking of sultans, should we introduce Sultan Evan? I have no way to make that
what?
Work.
that segue has to stay in because Nava is actually brilliant, and that segue was so dumb. All right, whatever. Let's get into it. Let's get into it. Our guest today is actually somebody I've known since we were all in middle school, slash not in middle school because we were actors together. Her name is Evan Rachel Wood. She's an artist and activist with a long resume. She's been starring in critically acclaimed films and series for the last 20 years, including Westworld, Across the Universe, and she was a voice actor in the iconic franchise Frozen. She also created the Phoenix Act, a nonprofit that works to organize and pass legislation to end the cycle of domestic violence. Incidentally, Evan brought a journal from when we were both like, I guess we were about 14 years old.
And I found all of my old journals, and I found the one that I wrote in the most when Penn and I were hanging out as teenagers. And I started reading through it, and I was like, I don't know if I can read this.
So we had plenty to talk about. Stick around.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I told you guys that I brought this diary of mine, and I was just horrified reading it, how like insane we all were.
All right.
I had a crush on Penn at this time because it says, well, we had another party at Penn's house. It was really fun. We really only danced. Because I'm disappointed that nothing else happened, yeah. Obviously. But I realized how hot Penn was. Whoa. He plays guitar, !! He played guitar and sang really well. It was so cool.
Aww. Thank you.
Really
cute.
So why is that so embarrassing, though?
That's not
that's
embarrassing.
Like so
Penn
embarrassing
is like
for me.
Fully
right?
Like no. Gripping the mic stand. Like, fist clenched.
I don't
sweating.
Know.
My palms are... Look at the sweat that's on the table from me just listening to this. I'm like... Ugh.
I still remember one of your songs.
Oh, God.
Please sing it.
No,
please
wait. I remember the first time I ever recorded a song and I brought it over.
Too.
And it was at Robert's place, I think.
I remember
playing it for a number of our friends. And
can we get a little...
Still got it. I mean, I can still hear it in my head.
It's such an embarrassing trope.
We can edit it out. We can edit it out.
It was really cute.
It's such a...
Stay with me tonight.
Yeah.
We'll go out walking, go out talking.
No, but it was
really good because there were like harmonies. Aww. And I remember...
Harmonies have always been my strong suit.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, we know that you two know each other, Evan and Penn, but we don't know the story of how you two met. So I'm wondering if you could tell us that and also maybe your first impressions of each other.
I don't actually remember the first time. Yeah, it was probably at some party.
It could have been very well been at the pool. It was in an apartment complex where we all hung out. Everybody in our circle
lived there
but you, right?
I moved in later.
Did you move into the complex?
I did.
I could have sworn you always lived out. You always seemed like...
I moved in for like 1 year. I lived with Robert and his family.
You lived with Robert?
Yes.
Whoa.
Wait, wait.
Robert
hold on.
And I still joke about this because Robert and I were like sweethearts back
then. Yeah,
in the day.
No, totally.
And we somehow convinced our parents to let us live in one apartment.
This is dawning on me. I am just remembering this. So
yeah.
You guys were...
You were definitely there. I have photos of you in that apartment.
Wait a second. So I forgot. You lived together and you... Wow.
And of course, nothing happened.
Because, I mean, at this point, we were probably all over. Like,
that was
14,
a joke.
14.
14, 15. It was right before I did 13.
Yeah.
And then I lived there briefly for a time after that. And then 13 came out and I just got completely swept away.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the end of my
stay there. Because the way that I remember you is you always seemed like the highly credible, like, one who was never a part of the situation of that apartment complex that we were all in. And we were all good friends. We all loved each other in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you're still in touch with some of those friends, right?
I am, yeah. Years ago, a lot of these kids...
We were all actor kids.
Tell us about the circle.
There was this apartment complex in Burbank that aspiring young actors would live in while they were homeschooled and went to acting class and went on auditions. And that was sort of our life. And that was how I grew up. That's what was just normal.
That's how I grew up.
Yeah, that Mara Wilson described it as, you know, if you were a kid in Burbank, going to acting class and going out auditions was like going out for youth soccer. You know, it was just that was...
Everybody did it.
Everybody did
it.
It
was a whole like network. Nobody had school, so you didn't have structure in that way.
No.
But you did have structure in the sense that you would sometimes go to work.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, actually, and you would audition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you deal with rejection on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Like a daily, just it's your life. You often go on 3 auditions a day.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes against your friends.
Yeah.
They're there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's
very strange.
The picture I have of this like apartment complex is that you're all parentless.
I mean, our parents
true?
Were there. So,
they were
no,
there.
So,
they were
like,
there.
Like, shout out to our parents. They were there. They were there.
They but were. So, they were.
Like,
some more than others, but
let's,
they were.
Let's okay, recognize okay. just that, you know, it, the, there's just an undeniable reality of children who end up in LA or Hollywood, you know, pursuing that career. You have anywhere from no to some to much talent, which doesn't only warrant you being there. Like it's a decision. It's a family decision or like non-family decision. It's a major thing. You know, hardly anybody was there with both of their parents. I don't think anybody.
Everyone was coming from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it was like, either Kansas or Florida or Oregon.
Like
or
they left siblings back home, mm-hmm. and right. it's like you know. Wow. And I think often, not always, but often it's a way to try and navigate a family that is struggling to, you know, stay unified in many ways. And sometimes it could really magnify that situation. Mm-hmm. And often it does. And so, I mean, it's like, you know, look, it's a tried and true thing. Child actors come from a really strange environment and it's mm-hmm. just ultimately not healthy. I feel like the experience has shown. The data has told us.
Yeah. Look,
it's not. But it's also like, you know what? I mean, it's not. It's hard growing up in a lot of places. So, yeah, you know,
it's an experience like anything else that shapes you in good ways and traumatizing ways.
And God bless our parents. They were trying.
They were.
You know, they all were trying.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thought they were doing the right thing. Yeah. You know, for the most part. And I don't remember the first time I met Penn, but I remember that. One of my first impressions of him was that he was different than the status quo and sort of like there was like a crowd that was sort of into the same things and we, you know, like kids do, we're all trying to be like each other and like the same things and get in the same stuff so that we feel like we belong. And Penn was there and he was into the same stuff, but he was also just not afraid to be like, no. I'm not doing that. That's stupid.
that's really
that's awesome.
That's good. I'm sort of buoyed by that. I'm sort of buoyed by that idea that I stood true to my.
You did. I mean, a lot of times, and because I just remember it was one of the things that struck me about you was that you know you just weren't afraid to say no, or I think that's dumb.
Did
or
I ever
I don't
say yes?
Do that.
Though that's the
yeah. You definitely did.
Okay, all right. Cool.
But I just thought, oh, that's cool. He, you know, doesn't give a fuck in many ways, which was one of the things I liked about you.
Thanks, thank you. The funny thing is that like that phrase "don't give a fuck" is interesting because like I feel like it's so often the person who doesn't give a fuck like really does give a certain kind of fuck. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I really remember those years with a painful insecurity. I mean, we all do, I guess, at that time. I mean, we must. Everybody's giving sober nods.
Yeah, not everyone was being rejected every day.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that sounds like people who are sending in stories would beg to differ. My sense of you, Evan, was like, it was similar to what you're saying. I mean, you, more than any of us, you seemed like an artist, to be honest. Because also your mother seemed like an artist, or she took it very seriously. Art in a way that was not the way I think a lot of parents in those places are. Mm-hmm. The things you were working on were of a certain caliber, and they continue to be.
Yeah.
You know, so that to me, you know, I mean, just look, the numbers are such that not everybody can succeed. You seem like you should have been there. You seem like you should have been doing it. You know, there's a lot of people you see alongside you, your friends, others. You're like, God bless you for trying, but like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And like what's happening, you know, it's just hard sometimes, I think, to watch that. And I'm sure we have friends who've grown up and, you know, it's like definitely does not go. It continues to go south. Do you still like keep a journal?
I do occasionally, yeah. But I used to write in my journal all the time. By the way, I was like totally closeted when we were growing up together as well. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. I, aside from having a crush on Penn.
I mean, by the way, I had a crush on you too, because it's like,
yes!
what are you going like, to...
Again, I was the only girl for like a while.
We were circumstantial. Yeah. I mean, like everything is circumstantial at that age. I mean, you were super cool. But I'm just.
Yeah, yeah. I did get a crush on a girl when I was 12, and she had a crush on me, and we did actually secretly lock lips a couple of times, and I was so scared. Hmm. Like my whole body was hot and my heart was pounding, and I ended up breaking things off because I was so terrified mm-hmm. of somebody finding out. And then I started dating a boy And then we broke up, and then he started dating her.
No.
And nice. He wow. had no idea that wow. any of this had taken place. Mm-hmm. And I used to go on their dates with them as a favor
oh, no.
so that they were allowed to go on a date. Right. Like, you know, because mm. you couldn't,
it could be two, oh, right,
two people yeah. couldn't go. Yeah. So
it's funny,
like,
the type of triangle
three
you were describing,
could.
I was like, right, you guys are 22, right?
Yeah. No. No, and so that was a very wow. strange. So I would be like sitting there in the movies with them, and I had crushes.
Your chaperone?
I was the chaperone, and meanwhile, I've like dated both of them, one in secret. They don't know. Like wow. it was such a strange place to be.
That's a lot.
Like, so I broke it off with that girl because I was too scared. It encompassed like so many feelings I had as a kid of insecurity and mm-hmm. Perfectionism and not letting anybody down, and like definitely can't like girls. Yeah. Like, so I was also dealing with that yeah, and right, not right, telling.
Wow, yeah.
anyone, because first of all, everybody in that apartment complex was constantly making gay jokes.
Yeah, that's true.
It was mainly, you know, geared towards the dudes,
well,
obviously.
It was such a typical, I mean, like it
very
was a pro
frat boy. Yeah,
typical,
bro.
Like,
but
much.
That's where you were like a little different because you weren't as like bro-y, I yeah. guess.
I mean, to be honest, I always wished I was. I really thought, I mean.
Yeah, you thought that was like the standard.
Yeah, I really, and again, I mean, going back to the way that media plays a role in helping us develop a schizophrenia around that, because I feel like it's like normalized, fetishized, and ostracized at the same time. And then when you're making media, like you're auditioning to play roles of people that you think that you should be aspiring to, like when you're trying to be the cool kid in a role as the cool kid, it's such a weird feedback loop, because then you, in inhabiting a cool character or something along those lines, you know, like for instance, my experience even on Gossip Girl in my 20s, that was like, you can make claims about wanting to be an artist as much as anybody, but you also want to be liked. And it's so hard to not be a part of the perpetuation of these tropes yeah. when you're a young person in Hollywood. I think actually that's a very, mm-hmm. it's like a fine gossamer thread, that one, but it's really significant. Like you, will do the things you saw in the American Pie, both in life, and then you're like auditioning to play these people and thinking that you're like, but you're insecure about it. And then, you know, it's a real like life imitating art imitating. It's like an intense feedback loop.
I remember doing projects as a teenager and never feeling like anybody was getting it right. And then I was always wearing clothes and doing things and thinking like, nobody dresses like this. Kids don't talk like this. Why are you making me do this? Like, it's a lie. Like, this is a lie. Which wow. is why 13 was refreshing, because I was like, oh, this is actually how it is. You know, more of the like extreme version of it, but it felt more authentic to me. We just didn't have anything else to relate to. I still feel that way sometimes, even as an adult, you know, and especially now that I'm older and I can actually like read between the lines of what I'm doing and what messages I'm putting out there. You start becoming like slightly horrified and you're like, oh, wait, I am also still in a corporation that has certain values that they want to be normalized and they need me to sell it. And I have a hard time with it more nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Penn doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I just, nothing but question marks here.
Yeah.
Can't relate.
But yeah, and it's easier to get swept away and be like taken advantage of in that way when you're a teenager too. Because again, you're just like more likely. Well, I don't even know if you're more likely to just do what you're told.
I think again, it's just what people experience in Hollywood is just an extreme version of what everyone is experiencing.
Yes.
I really, it puts it in a very weird kind of context and makes it very visible to other people, but that's maybe the extent of it. It's honestly not, I don't think it's exceptional.
Such a mess during those times. in the same way, I think everyone was like, man, she's like you said, supposed to be doing this. And I think my mindset was I'm supposed to be doing this, but I never really asked myself if like it was what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was going through so much behind closed doors. Like I was self-harming, from, I think it started when I was 13 or 14. Mm. So like, you know, even when I was coming over, like I always had like a wristband or like bracelets or something on. Like, so that started around that time. And I don't think anybody really I don't think I told anyone.
Yeah, it's news to me.
Yeah.
I do remember the bracelets.
There you go.
Wow.
I do.
Yeah. So that's why. And I just remember feeling like no one was listening to me. And like it's, or that I was being seen at all. Like, especially, I mean, there was a lot going on with me and my mom at that time. She was like a single mom. I was like a child actor. There's like a, you know, like, there's a lot going on there.
I know nothing about what you're talking
about. No, not at all. bless her heart. You know, like I love my mom and she really like did her best with what she had. It's what we all do. But one of the things that I loved about it was being able to be at that apartment complex and be with the kids, like that was the best part. And going to acting class, because that was the time I got to be with people my own age.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
It sounds like you've been touching on this a little bit, but I had a question for both of you because this podcast centers on people's middle school experiences and you've both had kind of unusual or not the typical ones.
Non-middle school.
Yeah.
They did not go to middle school.
We never...
But we were that age.
Yeah. It was more like we were in boarding school, honestly, because we were all staying in one place and doing school together, you know, and we're kind of confined to that compound.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would know otherwise because it was sort of the water you swam in, but how do you feel like being in the industry impacted your coming of age? And would you ever be comfortable with your kids entering the industry?
I get asked this question all the time, and my answer is always no, just purely because there's an age of consent for a reason, you know, because you're not able to objectively make decisions that big for your life without the experience or anything to compare it to. And it's just, for me, it was just so easy to be a conditioned people pleaser. And because I was really good at what I did, I felt like I had to do it and I couldn't let people down and I had to pursue this because I would be throwing something away if I didn't. And the lines just got so blurry so quickly. And, you know, that informed my life later, you know, and put me in a lot of really dangerous situations because I had never been taught how to say no. In fact, I was shamed if I said no. I prided myself on, you know, you grit your teeth and do it. You know, you go as far as you possibly can, even if you're uncomfortable, even if you're cold, even if you're humiliated.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's even
part
not,
of being an actor, there's this pride of like, I can take it. Yeah, I can fucking take it.
And that's not even, it's funny because what you're saying is often, I think, gendered, but I think in our industry, it's really not, that part of it is not gendered.
No.
Like you just say yes, you just do what you got to do. You do what the moment calls for, you do what the role calls for. It's like even something is seemingly innocuous as shooting a scene in the rain at 3 a.m. can be like truly arduous depending on what I mean, it's like, you know, you shoot it for 8 hours at a time. There's no real way to get dry or warm. You've got to emote. And in this case, on my show, like express rage constantly. And, you know, and it just takes a toll on you that in the beginning, you can only see so far into it. For a series, for a scripted series, you don't know exactly where it's going to go. You got to sign on the dotted line and then you virtually have to do whatever they write, you know?
Yeah.
The point is that I think for an actor, but which a lot of young people can relate to, it has to do something with like as you said, like people pleasing, like it's, I mean, boiling it down to like that age, what are you grappling with? You're grappling with being accepted. You're grappling with like, what, how do I have self-worth? How do I, like, what is it to value myself? And there's something about the industry that takes that mysterious, difficult process anyway, and it like throws rocket fuel all over it. And so I think for a kid, you know, if my stepson or my son, my stepson's 12, so if he was to say something like that now, it would just be like, well, first of all, it's up to his parents, but then I'd be like, no, when you're a teenager, we can reassess the question depending on your actual desires. And then with my son, I think it'd be the same. It's like, once you're in the 15, 16, 17 range, we can talk about like why you want to, and see maybe how we can address that, because it has to do with artistry. Mm-hmm. But like just going to LA and like what, like auditioning, agenting and all that stuff. Oof. We're both cringing.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
So no, I don't think so. It deprives you of a lot of life experience and socialization that I took for granted until I realized that I had such a hard time relating to people when I became an adult, because I only knew how to be a kid navigating an adult world, not an adult in an adult world. So
I think you just named the hardest barrier in my life.
Yes.
I'm going to have to excuse myself. Yeah. Evan Rachel Wood, it was nice having you.
I have a question, Evan. You know, you mentioned that some of these like early experiences primed you to always say yes and not be able to like assert your boundaries. And so for anyone who's listening and thinking about setting boundaries, do you have any advice now that you've sort of reflected on your own experience? And
I mean, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
But I mean, get comfortable saying no, get comfortable not being liked, get comfortable having bad things being said about you, and you know, be comfortable walking away and knowing that you're going to be okay. And all these things are easier said than done. And it's hard when like your livelihood is on the line and your dreams are on the line and your self-respect is on the line. And, you know, we all make compromises with ourselves, you know, all the time to get the things that we need. But I guess it's just knowing where your line is and staying true to that. But it's a different world now. It's like, people can speak up more now than they could before, which is amazing. And it's been amazing to watch that shift happen. Because especially when we were coming up, especially for girls, it was just like,
I feel like we are
couldn't say anything.
We're of like a, like maybe the last generation where it really was like the super binary norms, and there was no, like we still, it was like the nerds and the jocks. It still existed, whereas it feels a bit different now. It definitely feels different now.
Yeah.
And like people who are a little bit younger than us, like they might not even have quite the same. We still, it was like a movie. Ours, like I feel like that time as a Ute was still like an 80s movie.
100%.
Whereas young people now, they're just not quite, they understand those archetypes and not, they're not as desirable. I think we have a young generation. It's like conscious of these things. Like they can say toxic masculinity. Can you believe that? Like they can say, they can talk about white privilege.
It's amazing.
They can say, I mean, like that's unbelievable. At the same time, do we really think that's going to solve everything? I mean, obviously.
Because so much comes from experience too. So it's like, I can tell people how to assert your boundaries, and you know, people tried to tell me, but you just don't know until you're in that position. And of course it starts with how we're raised, you know, and it goes back to the parents too. And like, if they gave you an environment where you could speak up and have a voice, and where you were, had the freedom to figure out who you were and what you wanted and to test things and to be able to fail in a safe place. And like,
to know what security feels like.
To know what insecurity feels like, to know what failure feels like, to know, what it feels like when your boundaries being crossed, and to be able to be guided through that, and, you know, not too sheltered from it and not too just like, you'll be fine, figure it out. You know, it's like that, it's like this crazy balance. So, I mean, I think that would have helped me a lot if I had had a better kind of training ground where I could be messy and I had somebody guiding me through it. I think I was just held to such crazy standards at such a young age, and so much was expected of me, so much that I had never learned and never knew how to do. Mm. I was just like, I was expected to already know how to do it from day one. And I had no idea what I was doing. I knew I had to be a good actor, but I had no idea how to assert anything else because I never learned it. So it backfired pretty hard. Mm. Everyone always says instincts, like you have to listen to your instincts. And honestly, it is hard, but it is true. I mean, because in so many cases, like you can always kind of trace it back to that moment that you ignored, and
that's so true.
We were just talking about this the other day that like, you usually have a gut feeling that you had or like some whisperings. I think like as human beings we're like so bad at listening to our intuition just in general.
Yeah, and I think too much noise.
Yeah. We're gifted in that way. Like we have an intuition and we have a feeling and we're just taught to like ignore it. It's like, oh, it's normal. That's just how that person is. Or yeah there's
we're
so
also
many
taught
things
to see the good in people. And sometimes that's not always the best advice. Like I was just raised in a way that was like, always see the good, and like everyone's got some good in them, and you know, and that like got me in a lot of trouble because I would overly kind of defend. Mm. Like some people are just assholes, and you have to walk away. You know what I mean?
No, that's true.
Well, that's boundary. That's a boundary.
Yeah, exactly.
It also sounds like what you're describing is discernment. Like, how do you teach a young person to have good judgment and to have discernment and to be able to recognize when someone there is some good in them that can like be nurtured, and that's great. And when someone actually is someone that you should stay away from, or that particular relationship isn't going to be healthy, and actually it's better to not have it. Because I think we also have this cultural thing of like, don't judge, but actually we're all making judgments all the time. So how do we make good judgment? How do we discern between truth and falsehood?
And what judgments to act on, or like, like what judgments to listen to?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because even in, the people you have to draw boundaries with, that doesn't mean they don't have good in them. It's like this idea that there's good in everybody, it's not necessarily false. It just means that they're not always capable of
expressing
it. Yeah, their highest self. Yeah.
And some people cause harm and you shouldn't be exposed to that harm.
So one of the things that we like in this show is this idea that like, There's a significance to this period. Like, 12 marks a threshold before which and after which there's a difference. So I guess thinking about what you were struggling with then, knowing that a lot of times by the time you're our age, you're still struggling with a lot of the same things, but it's just, you've learned something. What is there any advice you would give middle school, Evan?
If I had been able to just like be out as a teenager, I can't even tell you how different my life would have been. Because I think so much of my insecurity and self-hatred and a lot of things came from this internalized homophobia that I didn't even know I had. Mm. And I would just love to be able to go back and be like, hey, date a girl. Like, it's totally fine. Please just do it. Please just go be yourself. I swear to you, in like 10 years, everyone's going to be doing this. It's not even going to be a thing. Like, go. Just go be yourself. I would beg myself to do that and tell myself to like calm down a little bit. Because I think I was like, I was very attracted to drama, which I guess like a lot of people are at that age. It's just like, that's how it's all playing out. You all think you're living like an episode of The Real World. In fact, that just reminded me that my brother filmed a fake Real World episode with all of us that
together.
This
needs to see the light of day. Yeah,
there's an interview with you in it.
I remember, your brother was like super artsy and really into film.
That exists somewhere. But
thank you, Evan, for coming. The door is behind you.
Yeah, please. Is really struggling.
You're definitely in it. I would probably I would tell myself to go talk to my mom deeply.
Oh, that's great. I would do the
deeply
same thing.
Talk to your mother.
And I would definitely do the same.
Sit her down and open, find the words and ask her questions and really get in there with her, I think. Yeah, that would be like one of the main things I would do. Mm. Mm-hmm. What would you do?
Nala, do you? We're gonna
Phone a friend.
Would you like to phone a friend? What would I do? Actually, the talking to the parents is a good one. I would definitely tell myself to like find ways to deepen relationships with both parents and other family members. Because by the time I found myself in my 20s, I did not have strong family bonds. Really like, and a lot of people who are in their 20s in New York, I think probably feel similarly, they're in New York because they're ambitious and seeking a career of some kind. It's often creative.
Yeah, if you're like in your 20s in New York, you're probably getting far away from your family. And
yeah, there's like by and large, I mean, it's
yeah, that's like what you do, yeah.
It's certainly like a high proportion of people yeah. like that.
But then I think you're right. It like circles back around and you get older, and especially after you have children,
oh, yeah.
you know, it changes your entire relationship to your family and how you think about them and want to relate to them.
Yeah.
And if you realize, wow, I haven't actually put anything into this.
Talking to parents, that's a deep one. I'm still learning how to do that one, by the way.
Yeah.
I have a question for both of you as parents. Obviously, your kids will have agency and will, you know, chart their own course, but what are your highest hopes for your kids when you sort of look into their future?
I mean... there's moments where I'm like, wow, you are a white male and I can really fuck this up if I don't do this right, you know? So like that responsibility dawns on me.
Yeah.
But if I can instill in him a sense of vulnerability and redefine what masculinity and strength means in a way that's not to step on and demean, but to protect and lift up and defend, and you know, this like warrior like energy that I hope I can give him rather than like a destroyer. Mm. I'd be very happy with that. Mm. If he felt like he could be who he was and talk to me about anything, I mean, that is one thing I think, because I didn't talk to my parents really at all, especially when I was a teenager, about anything. I was also raised in like an abstinence only kind of situation. Like I was had no sex education, like mm-hmm. literally nothing. So one thing I always make a point of saying every time he says, "Mom, can I ask you something?" I always respond, "You can yes. ask me anything."
Mm, that's touching.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can ask me anything, because he might not even notice I'm doing that. But I yeah. hope that one day, if he's grappling whether or not he can ask me something, that will be on a loop in his head, you know, that he can ask me anything.
Mm-hmm. I really like that.
Yeah.
My stepson is 12 and my son is like 10 months.
Wow.
So
weird.
I know, right? So I know. Because in some ways it's like, I'm like, you look the same. I feel like I kind of look the same. It's
yeah.
like, we both have kids.
It's so
What
weird.
On earth is happening?
And mine's going to be 12 tomorrow.
Soon. Yeah,
like he's turning 8 right. this year. So that's you know, that 3 yeah. years is going to just, he's yeah, going to be 12. Yeah, and I'll be like, you are the age I was when I was at the Kenwoods. And that's going to freak me out. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do like this, always encouraging them to ask questions, you know. And my highest hopes, you know, if he could, if both of my boys could grow up by the time they're in their 20s, to really want to like live a life of service. I can't imagine a greater sense of like relief.
Hmm. As a parent.
Yeah.
Wow, you're helping. Yeah. Somebody said something to me that just simplified everything so much about being a parent, especially when you start spitting out and you're wondering if you're doing it right. They looked at me, they said, "Isn't it amazing? All you have to do is love them." That's all you have to do.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, yeah, that really is. Like, you can fuck up so hard, but if at the center of it, you just unconditionally love your kids, like, they're going to be fine. And that gets me through a lot. Yeah, when you're really doubting yourself, like, no, all you have to do is let them be who they are and love them.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think because of great hopes for your children, even if it's like somewhat, if it's like a selfless hope, like I just want you to be all you can be, the structures you try to set up to create the space for that growth or the channel for that growth, you're human and you're going to get in the way. You're human and your ego is going to become,
and
you
your trauma is going to get in the way.
Yeah, I mean, completely. Like that is that's what parents.
That's the hardest part about parenting for me, is when you see and you feel yourself doing something that you know you shouldn't do, that is your trauma, and you watch it get transferred on your kid. And it's inevitable. This is going to, in little ways and big ways, but it happens and you know it's happening and you see it happening and there's nothing you can do. And you just go, okay, that is now yours. I'll see you in therapy. I'm so sorry. I did my best. Anyway, I cut you off. Go
no,
on.
No, I was cutting you off. But I was just going to say, I saw this thing the other day that was like, if trauma can be passed through generations, then hopefully healing can too. Mm, I thought that was so sweet. Like if you do take the time to be like reflective and really try to heal those parts of yourself that have been wounded, then that will also pass on to your children.
Thank you so much, Evan. This has been such a delight.
Yeah, really. Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
In addition to relishing Penn's discomfort during Evan's reading of her journal, I also really appreciated that Evan shared with us a little bit about boundaries and consent and how important those ideas are. Today's story is a really interesting one. Today's listener-submitted story, the tone in which it was written is really funny and kind of light, but it does actually touch on deeper themes of boundaries and what happens when your friends violate them.
So without further ado,
the leotard.
Nice tag teaming.
It all started on a Friday night during the summer of 2003. I was a prepubescent 12-year-old girl, and not one of those really grown-up-looking 12-year-olds you see running around on Instagram. No, I was awkward as hell. I had baby fat and buck teeth with rainbow braces and cowlick bangs. They were hot, but everything else was bad. So my mom picked me up from dance class and was driving me to my friend Alana's 12th birthday party. A boy-girl party. It was a big deal because my crush, Scott Scottson, was going to be there. I made my mom bring me my favorite t-shirt to throw over the embarrassing leotard I had to wear for dance class. This shirt was my absolute favorite and made me feel like a fashion icon. It had a cat on it, but she was like a French cat. Beret, sunglasses, lipstick, you get it. And it had the words, "It's a perfect day." Right? Written across the bottom in sparkly pink letters. This shirt was going to catch Scott Scottson's eye and make him fall in love with me. I just knew it. I arrived a little late to the party. So when we pulled up to Alana's house, all my friends were hanging out in the front yard waiting for moi. All the girls ran up to the car as I got out and yelled, "Let us see your leotard, Katie!"
"Let us see your leotard, Katie!"
And I immediately turned bright red, hoping that Scott was not paying attention. He was. And then he called from across the yard, "Yeah, Katie, lift up your shirt and let us see." This sent my friends into a tizzy of giggles. I wanted to die. They just kept chanting like kids in a cult who'd never seen a leotard, and it was like a leotard cult. I had to grip the bottom of my shirt to keep them from pulling it up. I ran into the house, straight to the bathroom. I ripped off my leotard, tossed it in the trash, let out a sigh of relief. I walked out of that bathroom to join my friends at that table. Finally, I'm safe. I wasn't, though. Unbeknownst to me, in the fleeting moments I'd spent in the bathroom, my friends had cooked up a plan to reveal my leotard. By the way, at this point, I know exactly what you're thinking. Why were these kids so obsessed with Katie's leotard? I don't know. Kids are fucking weird and mean. Okay, back to the story. As I stepped out of the bathroom, two kids ran up to me and restrained both of my arms while a third assailant, Cassie, grabbed the bottom of my shirt and pulled it up. Well, the leotard was gone, and my bare, undeveloped chest was flashed to the whole party, including Scott. Everyone went completely silent. Cassie looked like she was about to cry. Good, I thought. Let her feel bad for what she just did to me. The room was silent for the most painful 10 seconds of my life. Scott was the first to speak. Turning to our buddy Josh, he proclaimed, "Now it's a real party," while high-fiving him. My moment of humiliation blew over quickly, as many things do when you're 12, but damn, was it embarrassing. However, it all came full circle when we started school that fall as 8th graders, all grown up. Cassie got her period on the first day and bled all over the back of her skirt. I'd like to say I took no pleasure in her misfortune, that I was above feelings of schadenfreude. But nein. I laughed, silently, in the back row. And she ran out of the room in tears. To me, justice had been served. You can catch Evan Rachel Wood in the HBO series Westworld and the upcoming film Weird, the Al Yankovic story, or you can just follow her online at Evan Rachel Wood.
Podcrushed is hosted by Penn Badgley, Nava Kavalin, and Sophie Ansari.
Our executive producer is Nora Ritchie from Stitcher.
Our lead producer and editor is David Ansari.
Our secondary editor is Sharaf Entwistle.
Special thanks to Peter Clowney, VP of Content at Stitcher, Eric Eddings, Director of Lifestyle Programming at Stitcher, Jared O'Connell and Brendan Brines for the tech support, and Shruti Marate, who transcribes our tape.
Podcrush was created by Nava Kavalin and is executive produced by Penn Badgley and Nava Kavalin and produced by Sophie Ansari. This podcast is a Ninth Mode production. Be sure to subscribe to Podcrush. You can find us on Stitcher, the SiriusXM app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If you'd like to submit a middle school story, go to podcrush.com and give us every detail.
And while you're online, be sure to follow us on socials, or we're telling everyone that your mom still walks you to the bus stop. You don't want that. It's at Podcrush, spelled how it sounds, and our personals are at Penn Badgley, at Nava, that's Nava with 3 N's, and at Scribble by Sophie. And we're out. See you next week. And then we played Truth or Dare, and I had to kiss Josh. That's Josh Peck, by the way. And Josh still tells this story because apparently it was his first kiss, and he's never forgotten it.
Stitcher.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.